everybody pay?
The sequel, the threequel, we've definitely named an episode that before. Tonight, our deep dive into the Tortured Poets Department.
Yes. We, you know, like everybody else in the world, we can't stop talking about this album. So we're going to talk about it, the good, the bad, and the torturous.
Exactly. I'm Vina, by the way.
I am Joanna, and we also have guests of the pod.
Mm-hmm. We have special guest, my wife, Kelsey.
Mm-hmm. Hi, everybody.
Who's sort of our resident Taylor expert, I would say. Taylor correspondent? Swiftie correspondent?
Absolutely.
Yes.
I have guested on multiple Taylor episodes.
Yes, you've done the field work. For sure.
Subject matter expert.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, we will eventually get back into Original Sin, we promise. But this is almost an emergency broadcast of sorts, you know? I mean, we're sort of an almost a Swiftie podcast at this point. And, you know, it felt like we needed to talk about this album because, wow, this is a monster of an album in so many ways.
True, true. And we have, like, somewhat differing opinions about it. So I think it'll be really interesting to dive into. It is not a Gaylor-heavy album, being an album that is largely about the behavior of despicable men. But, you know, it is what it is.
Some might say that the gayest thing of all is to complain about despicable men, you know?
True.
Maybe, I mean, we will get into some specific tracks in a bit. And yes, there are many to talk about. But do you want to maybe talk a little bit about, like, what were your expectations going into this album, and how does this album match or not match, or, you know, interact with those expectations?
Well, I definitely expected that it was going to be a breakup album. Mm-hmm. You know, in the mold of Red, I would say, was kind of what I expected. And I feel like that is pretty close to what I got. I had not expected it to be a double album. I woke up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, it was released, to listen to it. And I had expected that like by 7, I would have been done, which was not the case. But I think it has more, like, you know, Taylor can be very, like, I don't know, Taylor can really be packaged as a product sometimes, and I feel like you do get more genuine glimpses of vulnerability here and of, like, Taylor's, like, struggling as a human person. So I feel like you get more of her in this album than I had maybe expected. And I would also say that I'm impressed with, like, the way that she takes the narrative of heartbreak as an adult and treats it very seriously.
Mm. What about you, baby? Same question.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today of, I was definitely expecting a breakup album. I was expecting All Too Well Part 2 with So Long London. And in some respects, we got that. But I was really fascinated, why all the Tortured Poets Department? It's such a clunky album title.
Yeah.
Why hitch your, why if you're Taylor Swift, why would you hitch your wagon to that? And I found that thinking about that question led me to some, I don't know, interesting insights about the album. But I think the album suffers for it.
Well, it does seem to establish a theme that isn't really carried through in the album completely. I mean, I think that in a lot of the marketing and everything, you know, there was all the stuff about, you know, the department is meeting or whatever that kind of implied, I don't know, to me maybe implied something a little bit more cohesive or thematic. And I think the main theme of this is heartbreak and just sort of somebody who's in kind of a dark place, kind of a self-destructive place. Did you have more that you wanted to say initially?
I mean, I think we'll get into specifics, obviously, mm-hmm. getting into tracks and things like that. But I thought it was interesting to think about the album in terms of Tortured Poets Department, somebody who is employed or is paid by somebody to continue rehashing their worst experiences and create them into art.
Yeah.
And what kind of toll that takes on just like a person.
Yeah.
And what does that look like in a modern light versus sort of a bygone past? I think that's what the title track seems to be talking about. And that is an idea that I think is woven through, but I don't think it's as clear a theme as it could have been.
I feel like you just stated that more cohesively than anything on the album does. I'm like, you saying that, I'm like, yeah, that tracks. That's interesting. And there's glimmers of that for sure. I mean, I will say I was kind of initially felt a little let down by this album. First of all, I just think it's too long. Like, that's definitely a lukewarm take at this point. But, like, I think that if this was like 12 to 15 amazing tracks versus like 31 tracks that some I think are really great, but there's a lot of what feels like filler. To me, the biggest like problem with this album is that I just think musically it's not very interesting. Kind of the thing that I've been saying since the day it came out is I think it's some of her best lyrics and her worst music. I just think that it almost some of it I'm almost like, oh, if this had just been, I think I texted this to you, Joanna, like if this had just been a book of poetry, maybe it would have been a great book of poetry, you know, or maybe it would have sucked. But I think it suffers sonically, and having it be so very long really hammers home to me that it all starts to sound a little samey. And like we did like some full rankings of the entire album, and there were definitely some songs in the middle there where I was like, I couldn't hum a bar of that. I need to re-listen to it, despite having like listened to the album obviously several times at this point. I spoiler for something we'll probably talk about later, but this at this moment in time ranks to me as my least favorite Taylor Swift album. Mic drop.
Shocker.
Well, you know what you said when you were talking about how you felt like maybe it would have worked better as a book of poetry, you said it was lyrically tense and also lyrically dense. I think one of those was like a typo, but they both sort of work. And I think that like the idea that it could be more, like that there's more of a crossover between poetry and the lyrics in this album, it comes from the fact that one, the music is maybe not, it's not as critical to the way that the songs sound as it sometimes is. That sounds weird to say, of course, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And also that there is a raw emotionality to it, and it is a little bit less polished than some of her other songs are. And the work itself does not care if it is painful or if it's digestible to its audience in the way that we are accustomed to her songs necessarily caring about those things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point.
It doesn't feel like a pop album.
No.
But you could say the same thing about Renaissance or Cowboy Carter.
Sure.
You know, I think Cowboy Carter at the very least is like an intricate sculpture compared to what Tortured Post Department is. I don't want to act like they're on the same caliber because I don't really think they're not competing in the same category.
I mean, I think Cowboy Carter like is one of the best albums of all time. So. Yeah,
that's true.
You know.
But what I meant to say is that Cowboy Carter is also not trying to be a pop
record.
I don't think Tortured Post Department is either.
I agree.
But Beyoncé does I'm not doing a pop record, I don't need pop radio, a lot better than Taylor Swift does.
Well, I think the Calvin Carter comparison is actually really interesting because that's also a very long album, mm-hmm. but it's an album that is crafted. And I think maybe part of why I respond to it is like, I really think the more that I think about Cowboy Carter, the more that I'm like, oh, this is crafted like a musical. Like everything mm-hmm. fits together. Every piece flows into the next piece. It's a story, but it also like each song can kind of stand on its own. Mm-hmm. It's like a really well-written piece of musical theater, yeah, I think.
It's Beyonce's Troubadour.
Yeah. And I think that this album doesn't really have that relationship between the songs in the same way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe this can lead into a sort of thought that I had, which is like, I don't think anyone is really saying no to Taylor Swift at this point. And do we think that this is a good thing or a bad thing or a neutral thing that is dependent on the circumstance?
Okay, so I hear you say that, and, mm-hmm. and there's a part of me that agrees with that, and there's a part of me that thought that, like, maybe the first day that I listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
But upon reflection, why do we feel like there need to be people all say no to Taylor Swift? It is very rare in the history of women in the entertainment industry that anyone is as powerful and as popular that they're able to say, you know what? I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to make the art that pleases me.
And true.
To that end, I say, go for it. Good for yeah. you, Taylor. Like,
yeah, you, that's true.
You don't have to create anything for me. You don't have to create anything for, you know, the Chiefs Kingdom. You don't, you know, you can, you can do it. You can do what you want. And I think that there is, especially after like all the stuff she's gone through with her masters, like sure. there's freedom in that. And I also think that it's an interesting, like, it's interesting that people are like, oh, someone needs to be saying no to Taylor Swift. Like, Bruce Springsteen has not made, I would argue, a relevant song since Devils in Dust in 2005. And I haven't heard a lot of people saying, well, somebody just needs to be saying no to Bruce Springsteen.
Sure.
That's fair.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with any of that. I think that that's all true. Me personally, do I wish that some editing had happened on this album? Yeah. In the grand scheme of things, do I think that people should be saying no more to her? Not necessarily. I'm doing that thing you hate where mm-hmm. I like tee up a question and then answer it myself.
Kelsey, I'm so sorry that you hate that because that is a that a might be kind of like a Vina TM.
I think where to me where it becomes I don't want to use the word that first came up for me was distasteful, but I don't want to use that word because it sounds very like proper mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. I think that the whole thing of like, I'm going to sell 14 versions of this album and mass produce vinyls with all the different colors and, you know, and do all of this. I think it's hard to have that and then also have like, well, this is just the art from my soul and it needs to be kind of respected as such. I think where it becomes challenging is when it becomes this huge commercial product. And I don't know. I have found some of the marketing around this a little, I don't know. It's weird to have such a personal work be marketed this way, I think. But maybe it's just that we haven't seen her go this personal before.
Well, one thing, I guess I was going to save this for, like, after we talked more in depth about the album, but we're pre-gaming very hard here before we get into the specific track.
We are.
So, to quote Mad Men, remember when Peggy Olson is talking to the awful man from Heinz Baked Beans, and she says to him, do you know how rare it is to come into this room and feel something? When you like look at their artwork. And I always think about that because I feel like it gets to the question of like what is art? What is it meant for? It's like a conversation, like through space, through time, through culture. And its goal, I mean, in a lot of situations, is to have like piece of art like evoke a response, to evoke an emotion in people who did not like experience whatever inspired it firsthand, but they're experiencing like a representational work of it. And so if the goal of a piece of art is to make people feel something, Jesus freaking Christ, it seems like every person on the planet has had some emotions on this album. In that way, I feel like, well, mission accomplished.
I mean, I cannot argue with that. Mm-mm. Absolutely. Do you two feel like the album is too long? Do you like the length of it? Would you take some tracks off?
I'm going to say I'm not sure yet.
Okay, that's fair.
Like, I mean, we've talked before about how, like, at first listen, I wasn't sure I liked Reputation, but now it's like one of my favorite Taylor albums. And I feel like her music has a tendency to like grow on me, I guess, especially since this is such a long album. I can't say that I feel like I have like an in-depth familiarity with each and every one of the songs.
Yeah.
Like, I would also say that the song Hoax, for a long time, I was like, oh God, you can definitely tell that's about Carly, because otherwise, why would she have kept it on the album? It's not a very good song. But now I actually quite like that song.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I do think that often with her albums, you have to sit with them, and with something that is this lyrically dense and tense,
and that might be
the case. What about you?
You know, it's tough. I was listening to some reviews of the album today while I was working, and one of the reviewers whose thoughts I was enjoying had an interesting thought of, he thought that the double album concept was probably introduced really late in the production process, and that's why there aren't vinyls for it. As in, it was originally just going to be the original, whatever, 15 track list plus the 4 bonuses or whatever. And they were going to be sent out. And then at the very last minute, she had all these songs that were ready to go, and they decided to make a second album, like the anthology. Mm-hmm. And they'll probably release the vinyls in a few months once they've been able to be produced.
Sure.
And I think that's... I'm so curious as to why that decision was made. Yeah. Why couldn't they do a Folklore Evermore, where it's clear that these are two sister albums and they can be listened straight all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't like wait a couple of months until the vinyls were ready. Why release them now?
Sure.
It's an interesting experiment to listen to them all the way through. I think it's also a totally different experience to listen to them both as like sister albums rather than one long album, because it's not being released as one extra long album. It's a double album.
Sure.
It's two different releases. So I will say, I think Tortured Poets Department, just the regular one, is a much stronger album on its own.
Interesting.
But I do like, there are songs that I really, really like on Anthology. So it's hard to... No. Also, I think certainly you and I have talked about this, and I'm presuming for you, Joanna, we're also like not the people who are going to get the most out of this album, because we're in three people in two very happy marriages. Right. I mean. I was listening to it and I was thinking, like, man, if this came out
like 4 years ago this time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the world was very different 4 years ago this time, but I was like getting over my first heartbreak mm-hmm. and kind of living alone for the first time. So I could definitely see a couple of nights where I'm putting on this very, very long record and just having on and off crying jags.
Oh, baby.
You know, and that's cathartic and you wallow in it and that's why it's so long and that's why it's such, it often can be like a very arduous listen.
Well, true. And the sort of almost unendingness of it feels like it is sort of replicating that feeling of just this unending sorrow and this like heartache that won't let up. It's interesting that you said that you feel like Tortured Poets is a stronger album, because I actually feel like I have like more of my favorite songs are from the anthology.
Hmm.
So it's just it's funny how that works. I mean, do we want to talk about some of the specific songs?
I think we do, but I do also want to say, like, when we were just kind of talking about, like, you know, this isn't an album necessarily that you listen to because you want to feel cheered up, you want to feel good, like,
sure.
I really don't think that's the purpose of it, but also I feel like we live, you know, if the pandemic taught us anything, I think it's that we live in a world where we're more isolated than we were before, that we are kind of sometimes isolated from one another and also like not necessarily very comfortable with expressing or showing our emotions as humans. And so sure. I think that Taylor, like doing an album that kind of like lets people access her sorrow is in a way a really generous thing. Like, if it helps people connect their feelings with hers.
Yeah, it almost gives people a bit of like a language to express something that they might not have the words for or the music for. This is where I a little bit wish that the music kind of matched the heights of the lyrics, because I don't know that there's necessarily the same degree of catharsis in the music as there is in these beautiful lyrics.
Well, do we want to start with a song that we both liked or a song that we had disagreement about?
Let's start with one we liked. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we want to, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I think at the top of your list and in the top 10 of mine is the song Peter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was high for you too, right? Or was it not?
I didn't do a ranked list. It was last on my fave list.
But it is on your faves. It does make the faves.
I think it's interesting because I think it's a song that most matches a traditional ballad for Taylor.
Yeah.
It's like a really, really tight, sustained metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the criticisms I think of this album is that she mixes metaphors quite a bit.
Yeah.
But that's not the case with Peter.
Well, I was listening to Peter and I was like, oh, I really like this song. And Kelsey was like, you like this song because it sounds exactly like a Lord song and you love Lord. And I was like, oh shit. So I will say this song sounds to me, and I would say that's another criticism I have of this album, is that I do think a lot of the songs sound like Lord and Lana songs, which, I mean, the Jack Antonoff is the common denominator there. And that's not necessarily a criticism, right? Because music sounds like other music. But there are a few tracks where I'm like, this seems like something, like a first draft of like a Lord song or a Lana song. But anyway, I'll stick with the positive here. I really think this is a beautiful song. It's simple. The metaphors are easy to follow. Mm-hmm. It's kind of made me think of what I wish Taylor would do, which is I was like, oh man, wouldn't it be cool if she did an album that was like all like folk tales, like not folklore necessarily, but like each song is about a specific fairy tale or folk tale. I also think that this album has one of the, like, lyrically and musically, one of the best riffs, and a riff that, like, I think repeats in the brain for me more than a lot of the songs on this, which is, you said you were going to grow up and you were going to come find me.
Said you were going
to grow up. And it's very haunting. It repeats a lot of times. And I think it's a very succinct emotion, very heartbreaking, honestly, that to me is more successful than some of the other versions of that throughout the album. I just think it's a beautiful song.
I agree with everything you said. And I also, I think as with a lot of songs, like as Taylor gets further into her career, and as the same like sort of metaphors keep popping up, like there are definitely some references or things that make you think of other periods of her work or other songs. And this one, it definitely evokes Cardigan with the Cardigan line, Peter losing Wendy.
Yes.
And also, it's kind of a counterpoint to Right Where You Left Me, where she's just sitting in a restaurant, you know, and everything else is moving on and she's still there. And then in this song, it's you know, kind of a different ending, like the, you know, the girl isn't going to be leaving the light in the window on anymore. And so I think that there's like, you see like a progression and you see like, you see just, you know, a more adult version of heartbreak, which I think is really.
I think that this album has some really interesting moments of being in conversation with older works of hers. And to me, those are some of the stronger moments of this album where I'm like, oh, we're, because a lot of this is, you know, I don't want to get too much into the like, oh, what's about Joe? Or what's about Maddie? Or what's about, you know, I was going to call him Tyler, Travis, some other boy's sports name. But, you know, there is a recontextualization of sort of so many of her Lover era, Reputation era songs being about what she thought was going to be her forever love, or at least was portraying that way. And there's some kind of second glances happening here of like, maybe things worked out a little bit differently and how they did. Yeah. Shall we move on?
Yeah. What song would you like to talk about next?
Let's talk about How Did It End? Because that's one that I know Kelsey and I both really liked and you did not like as much.
No, I had put it, where did it land on my list? It wound up like kind of, oh yeah, it was like, I had it in the mid to math section. and I feel like with an album that's this like heavy and dense, I don't know. I don't feel a super strong connection to this one.
Interesting.
And I guess like, let me think about how I want to put it. I like a lot of what she's doing here. I think the, like, my beloved ghost in me in a tree, D-Y-I-N-G, like, okay, that is really interesting. But this is going to sound mean, and I've been saying mean stuff.
You can be as mean.
I know, but I hate to sound that.
I'm the mean one on this podcast.
I like everything. That's like my brand. I feel that this song does not necessarily pass the so what test. Like, I kind of get to the end and I feel like I'm not sure that this one, I don't know. I don't feel like this one like really revealed much for me. I don't feel like it showed me a different perspective on things. So yeah, it was a lower one for me, but tell me what you liked about it.
Do you want to go first, baby?
Yeah, sure. I think this was one of the standouts from the anthology for me because I think just like the sheer devastation in the spareness of the composition of just like, everybody gather around, it's happening again.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. of this feeling that all relationships end and what she thought was going to be forever, or what the narrator thought was going to be forever, all of a sudden has ended. And it was just so unexpected, even if it's not that unexpected. But you're still, you know, walking around like missing half your limbs, even if it wasn't working.
Yeah.
As well. It's understated. I think the wordplay really, really works. And I think it captures a feeling that I haven't personally experienced, but I feel like I'm experiencing, of what I'm perceiving as like a long-term love of like a couple that has like friends in common.
Yeah.
And you have to tell them for the first time, like, me and, you know, my partner broke up. And then you want, that friend is trying to be empathetic, but they're asking a question that can't be answered right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think the way that it's like the question that the friends are asking that the narrator is also asking herself. Mm-hmm. I also think on an album that's like full of imagery, for whatever reason, the image of the friend going home and like relishing in their happy relationship and like calling their cousin. And there's that line about like a breath and then, or something mm-hmm. like that. It was more effective for me than some of the others. I just found it really, just the, you know, you were talking earlier about like art that makes us feel things. And that's in an album that's like about tragedy. That's genuinely a song that makes me feel the tragedy, mm-hmm. you know, in a way that I found really effective. Yeah.
Love that. I feel like when you're talking about, it's like how this huge thing has happened to you, but you have to keep going, you're walking around, but it's like you're missing your limbs. I feel like that kind of connects to another song that Vina, I know you and I both had really enjoyed off of the album, which was like, it's a bop, but I think it might be one of the only ones that you can really say on this album, it's a bop, but it's I Can Do It With a Broken Heart.
Which... Have you seen the music video that she released for that?
Or the lyrics? It's fascinating because it's all footage from the tour.
It's so fascinating. Like,
it's so meta. Yes.
Yeah.
We were watching
the real Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were watching the phone. Is she dead now?
Yeah. Yeah.
We were watching the Fortnite video on the TV, and like one of the suggestions was like, I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. And it's just a lyric video, but it has like, you know, she'll put like those stock images or whatever.
Yeah.
On top of it. And we were just like, wait a second. Did she put footage from the Eras Tour? And then we watched it and we were both like grabbing each other, be like, she's insane.
How did she do this? How did she do this? And then like, this is just this is the algorithm. This isn't Taylor, but like it ends and the first ad is like, watch the Eras Tour on Disney Plus. And it's just like, oh my God, this is wild. That song is, lights, camera, bitch, smile, mm-hmm. like incredible line. Mm-hmm. It's got so much, like it's got rhythm to it. It's got momentum, which is more than mm-hmm. some of these songs can say. But it's like fun, but it's also devastating. And it's, mm-hmm. to me, it feels just so brutally honest of like mm-hmm. somebody going through something. It's funny, you know, before we started recording, you brought up Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and it sort of feels like a Crazy Ex-Girlfriend kind of song where like the music and the lyrics are not matching, but in a way that's like very intentional and almost a little bit eerie, mm-hmm. but very effective.
Yeah. It feels like, I think the arrangement and production of that song makes me feel like, oh, is this what it's like to have a manic episode?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't know what that's necessarily like, but the feeling of just like, okay, I have to be so up and I have to be so like on it for this amount of time, and then I'm going to crash.
Yeah.
And
you have the expectation of that while you're also trying to do your job, trying to perform.
And I think being, you know, there's her like kind of talk singing at the end, you know, saying like, and I'm miserable, is really interesting because that's like something that she's done in a few of her songs and, you know, a lot of artists do. But almost always I feel when she's done it before, it's like for a comedic beat. So it's really interesting to have it be in technically still a comedic beat, but like a very darkly comedic beat. I think it's kind of playing with our expectations of what a Taylor Swift song looks like in a way that I think is kind of brilliant.
Yeah, it's so interesting in that song to end on the line, try to come for my job.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a thing that I think she's talked about in interviews more and more as she's like gotten into her 30s of like what I do as a pop star. This is my job. This is a business that I'm building. Mm-hmm. I am good at my job and I've done it for 17 years. I've done it for like, you know, like 9 or 10 albums at this point, and I'm good at it. I am provably good at it. Stop acting like I'm a show pony.
Sure.
You know? And I think that's also a turning point on the album. I don't think it's the like dead middle of the like original album, but I think it's like kind of close to the point where it's interesting to have this moment in the middle of this very confessional long album to be like, oh, by the way, I could be fucking with you this entire time.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You're seeing what I want you to see.
Yeah. Like I'm, this is still a project that I'm releasing. Mm-hmm. I'm still an actress.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's, I really want a drag queen to lip sync to this song. I think it would be incredible. Yeah.
I think that one of the things that is so captivating about that song, like you were talking about how it feels kind of like a crazy ex-girlfriend song, like the lyrics and the music don't quite match up, especially when it's like, you know, like the part where she's saying like, I'm so depressed I act like it's my birthday every day, and it almost sounds like a cheer at that point, like,
yeah,
and combining it with the Eras Tour video, which was like, you know, really marketed as this like triumphant return for her. I feel like the interesting thing about that song is when it's over, not only are you left not knowing exactly how to feel about it, but you don't even really know how Taylor wants you to feel about it. And I think that is a tricky trick to pull off.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking at the track list here to see what comes after it. It's that it then goes into The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. So it's like, yeah, it's like right in the middle of all this, these kind of slow, sadder songs.
Yeah, it's I noticed it today. It's sandwiched between Love of My Life / Loss of My Life and The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. Two of the most devastating tracks.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
And also I think one that I know we're not really paternity testing the songs in this conversation.
Paternity testing. But,
it's not original to me, but it's sandwiched that one song that's specifically about her her own emotional experience of like, I just broke up with my longest relationship, and potentially also during the breakup with Maddie, since that was also happening around the Eras Tour. Like, there's one song that's that to me reads very clearly as being about Joe, and one that reads very clearly about Maddie Healy. And then it's just like, oh, it's just like round and round, this like trio from hell.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels very intentional where it is placed in the album.
Yeah.
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 Do we want to move from that song, which is a bit of a bop. I'm not going to say that this next song is also a bop, but I feel a very sing-alongable song and a very enjoyable song. And that is one that Vina, I know you and I don't totally agree about, but it seems like Kelsey enjoys it, and that would be Florida.
Yeah.
I feel like
one hell of a drug.
It's a hell of a drug. I think that's the most, I think, sonically interesting of all of them, because it's like, it's got Florence Welch on it.
Yeah.
And she sounds so fucking good. And I think, I think the drums are so great. I think she's going into more of a sort of folklore-y, like, I'm telling a story about a real thing that happened. I'm telling a fictional story about real feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's interesting, I think, juxtapositioning an album that kind of exists in a universe that's really not tied to any sort of geography. And the two touch points are like Florida and London for some reason.
Interesting.
Because two very diametrically opposed places on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Joanna, do you want to say why you like this song before I bring on the hater-aid?
Well, I love Florence Welch, of course. And I think that, like, her section of the song is amazing. But I also think that the lyrics on this one, on an album of standout lyrics, I really have to say, like, little did you know your home's really only a town you're just a guest in, is terrific, as is, you know, little did you know your home's really only the town you'll get arrested. Like, both of those, I think, are fantastic. And this is, the whole album is about, like, you know, So Long London, and like kind of figuring out like where your place in the world is.
Yeah.
So I like that. I like the idea of a hurricane with my name. I like the idea of, like, you know, I'm haunted, but I'm doing just fine. Like, I really enjoy this song. I think it is sonically interesting. I think it's lyrically interesting. I think, most importantly, it's fun. I feel joy when I listen to this. so that really takes it to the top of my list.
Gotcha.
It's my second favorite on the album.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It's one of the few songs that I can imagine singing in a car.
Sure.
Sure. Like that. Probably I can do with a broken heart and maybe a few of the sad ones.
Sure.
But it's, yeah, which I think has a lot of appeal to a song.
Sure. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
hater.
Resident hater. I don't want to hate too much on this song. I love Florence Welch. I just want to get that out there. Mm-hmm. Huge, huge Florence and the Machine fan. I don't know what it is about this song that doesn't work for me. I really wanted to love it, and I don't really disagree with anything that either of you said about it. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it doesn't really fit very well on this album. For me personally, I just think it feels a little bit out of nowhere. And I kind of, I don't know, it feels a little disjointed to me, the structure of it. I think the drums are fun, but to me, they feel a little bit like they come out of nowhere. And it's one of those songs where it's almost like I'm like jumping rope, but you just like can't quite get in the rhythm of it. Like, it's just a song that every time I've listened to it, I'm like, I can't quite get in the rhythm of this song, and I'm not really sure why. I don't have like a concrete reason why, like, this is a bad song or anything like that. I don't think it's a bad song. I just haven't been able to connect with it, and maybe I will at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it would probably be a really fun song to hear live.
I will also say, I think it is one of the gayer songs on the album.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, two women are singing, so I think it would be very interesting to do something with this song and Two Most Wanted from Cowboy Carter, because I sort of feel like they're two sides of the same idea of like two women kind of running away from their past, but like one is very joyful and one is like kind of not as joyful.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. There's something there. There's something there. I don't know what it is, but there's something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I've taken over our set list. Apparently, you know, I'll pick this one and then we can go to anyone you want. But
sure.
So If Florida is one of the queer songs on the album, I would say probably the queerest one for me has got to be Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus.
Yeah. Which I think is a song we all really liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me.
You're so on it.
I didn't hate it. It's one of those ones where I'm just like, it's fine. Like, whatever.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for when Taylor Swift starts listing things. I think that that's why I love The Other Side of the Door as much as I do, because the like outro of that song is just her listing things. And I don't know why, it just tickles my brain somehow. So there's a lot of her doing that in this song and I like it. Yeah. I mean, this is like a canonic, there is a canonically bisexual character in this song. Kelsey and I were having a conversation of like, is she like outing one of her boyfriends with this song? Hopefully not, because if so, that's kind of not cool. But like, no names are mentioned of like, you know, who is potentially hooking up with the various people. But yeah, I think that there's a mournfulness to this. You know, the line about if you want to break my cold heart, you know, just tell me. What is it, like you love me for who I am or something, like it's something like that.
Yeah, you love me,
something you really like me for bring the lyrics.
There are so many songs on this album, baby. There are so many songs.
And it also says, like, remember, you know, tell me that you'll always wonder, like, which I
yes
love,
yeah.
I know we're not going to paternity or maternity test any of these songs, but there is a reference in this to Scarlet / Maroon.
Yeah.
And you know, I will just say, like, you all know who I think Maroon is about. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the breadcrumbs are there if you want to follow them, for sure. For sure. To me, this song reminds me a little bit of The One. Just in terms of that idea of like, maybe there's a universe where we could have been together, but this isn't that universe. Mm-hmm. And that kind of breaks my heart if I think about it for too long, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It feels very much like kind of passing ships in the night, sort of. This is the song that has the line about like, and you just watched, right? And mm-hmm. you just like the idea of, which also feels very like Last Kiss too, right? Of like, you're watching somebody's life unfold from afar, somebody who was like right by your side. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us why you're so on this song?
Yeah, it's just like, it's not, there wasn't anything, there wasn't an idea in this song that I felt was unique to this song in relation to this album.
I think that's fair.
Like the idea of like, I'm going to watch you move on and that kills me.
Yeah.
I think So Long London does that better.
Sure.
It's not explored as fully, but it's there. Mm-hmm. I had to look at the lyrics because I couldn't remember what they were.
Uh-huh.
Like there's stuff that I like. I thought the lines, I change into goddesses, villains, and fools, change plans and lovers and outfits and rules, all to outrun my desertion of you, and you just watched it.
I really like that part.
Yeah, so, like, there's good stuff in it. But it's just, like, I don't know.
It doesn't quite do it for you.
No, like, there's stuff. She's doing stuff on that track that I think she does better elsewhere.
Sure.
So this could have been a cut for me.
Well, and so piggybacking on that idea, I know you felt the same way about Clara Bow, a song that you really didn't like, and I actually quite liked. I ranked that song pretty high. Mm-hmm. And Joanna, I think that song kind of in the middle for you, or was that a little bit higher?
It was like around 14 for me. So it was
like high
it
middle.
I put it as when I broke it down into actively enjoy, mid to meh. And then at the bottom, I had like five, but I just wrote no.
Yeah.
But yeah, it made it into the actively enjoy bracket.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Clara Bow, I agree that this is not a new idea for this song, and that mm-hmm. it's not even perhaps her best exploration of this idea. But there's something about, I don't know, there's something, first of all, I think this is one of the prettier songs on the album. I also just, I think that there's a sort of pain that she reveals here that does feel a little different to me from other times she's explored the idea of, like, what does it mean to be kind of one in a legacy of these women who have been in the spotlight and then maybe maligned or kind of pushed out or forgotten or exiled or what have you. Mm-hmm. I also just, you know, this is the first time in a song that she uses her full name. Like, she's referred to herself as Taylor before, but mm-hmm. There's something about the moment when she calls herself Taylor Swift that feels very kind of powerful to me, even as it's sort of couched as like almost a criticism of herself or a criticism that she's received. I don't know. I found it to be an affecting, like, mm-hmm. a version of this concept.
I think this is an interesting song. Like, I'm interested in it in a similar way to how I'm interested in I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, in terms of, like, when you're done listening to the song, like, you're not really sure how to feel. Like, it's a little yeah. uncomfortable. Like, is Taylor talking about herself? Is this a question of, like, you know, what is the identity of Taylor Swift? Does it look like, you know, is it a callback to, like, you know, Bold was the waitress down at the Lakes who said she looked like an American singer. Like, is it that kind of a thing? Or is Taylor, like, talking to the next, you know, the next one up? I think that's, like, an open question.
Well, it's kind of interesting to think about this, like, the lucky one is from Red is sort of her as the newbie looking ahead at somebody who left the scene, you know, nothing new, which allegedly was written at the same time. But I feel like because it was released later, it, to me, that feels like a song released by a more grown up version of Taylor. And that's sort of her feeling like, oh, my gosh, is this, when is this going to be over? When are they going to be sick of me? And then this almost feels like a more holistic view of that same idea a little bit.
Is it time for Hater Hour?
Sure. Sure. You go for it.
I just think nothing new is better.
Sure.
Nothing new is more about the devastation of knowing that, you know, they're going to, what's going to happen to me when I'm nothing new? What's going to happen? I'll meet her someday and she'll say she got the map from me. Yeah. And then I'll cry myself to sleep.
Yeah.
This feeling of, like, she's plotting her own downfall.
Yeah.
I will say something that I think Clara Bow does that is new is talks about her as a cemented legacy, which is not something that The Lucky One or Nothing New ever did. They both seem to be operating from a place of, like, I will fade into the annals of history. And everything about this experience of being famous is really ephemeral. And that's not true anymore. She's the record to beat in terms of concerts and things. Like, she's in the history books no matter what. I don't know. It's for a pretty short song to be the album closer. I wish there was more detail about the women that she evokes, which is Clara Bow and Stevie Nicks, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm kind of talking myself out of the hater of it all.
I think the power of Taylor and the power of us.
I know. It's I like the production. I like that it's interesting that she's talking about a cemented legacy. And also a little bit talking
maybe sort of hinting at the idea of what does it mean to be Taylor Swift the person once Taylor Swift Incorporated is cemented as one thing in the history books.
Sure.
But I just said that out loud and I'm like, well, that's not really in the song. Be cool if it was in the song.
I think it's not a great album closer. I will say that. And I think when you listen to the anthology, the manuscript, which is like a song I'm kind of meh on, but that does feel much more like the album closer to me. Also, such a Presria song. Oh my God. A song that I think would be interesting to talk about because it is very low for me, but you put it like right next to Claribo is The Bolter.
Yeah, I see a connection between those two. One thing I will say about Claribo, I think that, you know, possibly because it's the Tortured Poet Society, and so she's like sort of, you know, dipping into the realm of like more lyrical poetry kind of stuff. There are a lot of songs where it feels like she is trying harder than usual to stick the landing, and it doesn't always really happen. And I think on Claribo, she does stick the landing. And I think that is really like a standout for that song. For The Bolter, I feel like it's similar to Claribo. The Bolter was like the last one in my bracket for actively enjoy. I like the started with a kiss, oh, we must stop meeting like this. It always ends up with the town car speeding up the drive one evening. I like that as the chorus. I think it's fun. I liked the part about the you know, he was a cab, wanted her bad, just like any good trophy hunter. There were just parts of it that I enjoyed enough that it still wound up on my actively enjoy list.
See, I think that this has some of the worst lines and the most muddled metaphors of the album. Okay. You had a whole spin on the metaphor, but the whole thing about like he was a trophy hunter, but he's also a bear. And like you had the point about like, well, maybe he's the predator and he's also the trophy hunter. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not in the song.
Well, the trophy hunter is a type of predator.
Yes, but it's not in the song.
It's implied in the song.
I don't think it's strongly in the song.
Okay.
This is an example of like, Taylor, you got it over your head on this one. Like the metaphors got away from you. It happens.
You got it over your head. Like you fell through the ice.
Yeah. It happens to the best of us, you know? And it's a skip for me. It's a skip for me, dog. Hmm.
Yeah. Well, I felt like this one, it had at least like it had a somewhat more positive energy to the heartbreak. Like when she's leaving, it feels like freedom, it feels like breathing.
Sure.
Maybe that was more of why I liked it, but
it isn't as depressing as a lot of songs on the album. I will give it that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I when you were talking about that, baby, I was thinking of, I forget who it was, but it was, I think it was like the poet, one of the poet laureates who was talking about writing poetry. And he said that like one of the guiding principles that he gives his students, his poetry students, is like, you can't start in Oz. You have to start in Kansas and then you take the readers to Oz. If you start in Oz, nobody's going to know what's going on.
Mm.
And I wonder if that principle is not being applied very well here.
Sure. I can see that. But you quoting a poet laureate.
It would be more impressive if I knew who it was.
Yeah, I'm still impressed. Kelsey, are there songs that you want to talk about?
I think we need to talk about the Kim song because it sucks so fucking hard.
I was going to say we should go there because you were talking about how she refers to her legacy. And I was going to be like, oh, there's another song where we mentioned the legacy. And it's not a favorite.
No.
Do we all hate this song?
I think you maybe had it ranked higher, Joanna, or like
I had it in the bottom.
We had it in the bottom.
Column, but in the Mac column, it was 20.
Yeah, it's just she needs to stop talking about it. Like that to me, I almost don't even care about the song itself. It's just the concept of it. I'm like, look, Taylor, we all know that your feelings were very, very hurt by Kim Kardashian and that your life was negatively impacted by Kim Kardashian and that this was a traumatic time for you. You need to stop talking about it. Like, it's just, it just, you cannot keep making music about it.
Listen, but when you think about the diss tracks that we have had from Taylor in the past, when you think about Bad Blood, for example, and how hard that song went, that's right. Do you not like Bad Blood, Kelsey? Is that not? Okay.
I hate Bad Blood. I hate it. I've hated it for years. I got a little bit of my good graces because I listened to the re-record and the live version, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I got it more when I was listening to it live at the concert.
Yeah.
But if you re-listen to the version of it that doesn't have Kendrick Lamar on it, it's like, this fucking sucks. I hate this. I hate that I'm listening to this.
I don't really like it very much either. I like the re-record a lot more.
I feel like that was nonetheless, like, that was pretty, like, you know, it was a diss track. It was essentially, we're not maturing distance. It was about somebody she was, as Sydney and PLL would say, someone she was having beef with.
She was beefing.
She was beefing. Yeah, where's the beef? But, like, we've got that one. We've got Karma. We've got, like, a lot of really
Mad Woman.
Yeah. Right.
Ricochet. Yeah.
So we've got tons of really good songs where Taylor is unhappy with someone. And this is just not that. Also, if you're going to do a song where it's in the lyrics, like, whoo, I changed just enough so no one will know that it's about you and me, except you and me, then don't get cute with this capitalization in the title. That's going to be like, you know, like, that's like, I had a book in a college poetry class that I took that said, like, what you don't want to do in a poem is telegraph what's coming next. Like, no one wants a sign that says, like, this way to the nearest wonder. And I feel like that is kind of, that's kind of what this song tries to do. And I don't want to.
Yeah, I also think she tries to have it both ways, where she's saying, fuck you, Kim Kardashian, but also, thank you, Kim Kardashian. Aren't I gracious? Aren't I now the big pop star in the entire world, and you tried to fuck up my life?
Yeah.
But I'm great. I'm awesome. I don't think about this at all.
She also had a song about this, like, two albums ago called Closure. And it's like, Taylor, you don't get to write another song about this after you've written the Closure song.
Also, like, you can write about this situation or feeling like, oh, I was profoundly portrayed by somebody that I thought I was pretty cool with.
Yeah.
But you need to dress it up better. You need to put it in a different costume. You need to put some teeth behind it. Or you can just talk about how, you know, everybody tried to stop me. Kind of like Karma. Like, everybody thought I wouldn't make it. Everybody tried to fuck this up for me, but I'm awesome and I'm here.
Karma is such a good song.
Karma is such a good song. I just want to listen to Karma.
But also, it's like, you can also write that song and not release it. That's the other thing. You can feel those feelings and write that song and then say, you know what? This is an example I'm going to say where I'm like, maybe someone could have said no to her. Where I'm like, did you really need to release this song? To me, it just makes her look really childish. And I saw an article today, I think I sent it to both of you, that was like, Kim Kardashian wishes Taylor Swift would stop talking about her. And I'm like, look, I don't think Kim Kardashian is a good person, but I'm team Kim on this one. And, like, the other thing that I mentioned to Kelsey that, like, particularly I think puts a bad taste in my mouth around all of this is, like, the stuff that was going on with Kim and Kanye, like, so the stuff that was, when Kim Kardashian, like, you know, had the whole snake thing against Taylor Swift and all of that, she was married to Kanye West, obviously, And like now we know that that was like a very toxic, controlling marriage. And so it particularly feels gross to me for Taylor to like call Kim out again when like she's not married to that dude anymore. And like we don't know the potential abuse dynamics that were going on there, but like it just doesn't feel great. I just think it's gross. And I think she shouldn't have released it.
I will say, I was just going to say, I think it's great if Kim Kardashian is saying through her people that she would like this to stop. But, like, then say something publicly about it then. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It'd be like, well, I know I created this situation, or, like, helped create this situation. But yeah. I really wish the person whose career I almost completely, like, blew off the tracks would stop talking about it now that she's fully bounced back. Like, she's not, like you said, she's not married to that guy anymore.
Yeah.
She can say publicly, like, maybe she doesn't say anything about Kanye, but she just says, this is a situation where I did a thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, maybe she thought she was doing the right thing, or I thought I was protecting my man, and I fucked up somebody's life, and I didn't think that would happen. And sure. and now I'm a mother. and I know how fiercely I would want to protect anybody who tried to do the same thing to my daughter. So you know what, Taylor? I'm sorry. You know what I mean?
I get that. I also think she just wants to be done with it. Which sure. I understand too.
I think Taylor can write songs about it if they're better.
Yeah.
I think that Kim Kardashian mostly wishes people would stop talking about it because it reminds everybody that she is kind of a trash panda of a human.
I just want to be clear. I'm not defending Kim Kardashian here. I just think the whole situation is weird.
I don't love the song. I don't necessarily think that there's a timeline on which anybody has to like get over shitty things that people do to them. But I do agree. Like Kelsey was kind of saying, like, I wouldn't mind hearing another song about it. It just needs to be a better song than this one.
Sure. Fair.
And to your point, baby, there's a difference between, like, you don't have to forgive somebody who wronged you on a certain timeline. It's a different thing when you're making that part of your professional life.
Yeah.
In any other context of work, it would be like, man, that person's really shitty. They're still like kind of really going after somebody who prevented their promotion or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's messy. It's messy. And sometimes Taylor's messy in a fun way, but I think it's messy in a less fun way. Mm-hmm. Speaking of potentially messiness, can we talk about So Long London?
Yeah, this was one that we all, I think that like, in general, this one is one that a lot of people like. I like it.
Yeah. I think this was like a very highly anticipated one going in because it was like, oh my God, this is the Joe breakup track, you know? And it's gorgeous and it's sad. And I think it's maybe a little angrier than I expected, but I get it. And I think it's really powerful. And I think the whole idea of, I'm angry that I wasted this youth on you is a really fascinating idea. Mm-hmm. I think to me, she sounds so much like Lana on this song, but that's okay. I think it's a really great song.
Lana doesn't usually have this level of vitriol, though.
No, I just think her voice sounds like Lana.
Sure.
I like her voice on this album. I agree that there are times when she is sounding like that, but I feel like, I don't know. I like this. I like this sound from her just in general. I like the kind of world weary tone that she's bringing to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Anything? Yeah, I like. I think it's really interesting. So I'm trying to remember. Is it really close to? Yeah. So Down Bad and So Long London are right next. They like, I think they feed into each other.
Interesting.
And it's interesting that So Long London has that sort of pulsing mm-hmm. at the bottom of it all. And it has that kind of is it like police sirens that are kind of muted at that yeah. kind of like Wii U kind of alien-y sound
mm-hmm.
That I think adds like an eerie and an urgency
yeah.
to this song. And it's a tension that never really breaks,
mm-hmm.
which I think is interesting. And I think it colors an emotional state into that song that is really interesting of being like world weary, exhausted, bone deep disappointment and also anger that
yeah.
now an entire huge city
yeah.
that she's lived in for years. Now she's like, in many ways can't really go back to the way it was.
Yeah.
She thought this was going to be her hometown, bringing back kind of the idea from Florida.
Yeah.
She thought this was going to be her home forever.
Yeah.
And now she has to pick up stakes and move someplace else.
You were my town. Now I'm in exile, seeing you yeah. out. You know, mm-hmm. There's almost a panic in the song, even though her voice does have this world weariness. There's, I think because of the kind of the rhythm of it, there's this sort of, it feels like this mounting tension mm-hmm. that I think kind of mirrors what sounds like was the end of this relationship, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, little did you know, the town you called your home, you were just a guest in. Like, I yeah. feel like it, you know, it connects to that very much.
For sure. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
What other songs would you both like to talk about?
I think we were going to talk about Get You Back.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Which is a song that you like, Joanna, and I don't yeah. like, but I think there's a very specific reason for that, which is...
I would tap this as the third queerest song on the album, because I think this okay. is one that could be about a man or a woman.
Sure. I think this is a really fun song. I wish that Olivia Rodrigo hadn't released... I actually really like Get Him Back,
mm-hmm.
The Olivia Rodrigo song. But, like, this song is the same idea and maybe a less fun version of that idea, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also think the Olivia Rodrigo song is, I think it's a tighter song.
Yeah.
It's
more fun.
It's more fun, not even in the sense of, like, Olivia Rodrigo is, like, or the speaker is having fun necessarily. But I think the phrase, if you want to do the sort of double meaning of like, I'm going to get you back as, and I'm going to get back together with you, and I'm going to get you back as revenge. No adult says that seriously. Like, that's a childish phrase. If you say I'm going to get you back, like, that's a childish thing. And I think the Olivia Rodrigo song taps into that better of like, this is not my best instinct. This is not an adult instinct. It's a thing of like, I don't know if I like you or I like the way you make me feel, or maybe I just want to hurt you the way that you hurt me. And it goes back and forth in a way yeah. that's a little bit more tongue in cheek, because nobody's allowed to have fun on a Taylor Swift album anymore.
Yeah.
And so now but when Taylor does it, it's still, I think it's too serious for that wordplay to work. Although I think the idea of like, we're broken up, but I know you still want me is an interesting idea. It just can't be whatever this song is.
Yeah. I just pulled up the lyrics to the Olivia Rodrigo song, and the bridge, I'm going to do a live reading just because I think they're really fun. And I think it'll maybe give you, Joanna, a little flavor, because I don't think you have heard the song.
I have not heard the song. No.
The bridge is, she says, oh, I want to key his car. I want to make him lunch. I want to break his heart, stitch it right back up. I want to kiss his face with an uppercut. I want to meet his mom and tell her son sucks. So it's very fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's silly, but it's fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I'm interested in talking about is some of the songs that don't stick the landing on the last line, because I feel like that is a theme as we go through this album. I feel like Manuscript has a very like facile last line of the stories aren't mine anymore. I feel like Guilty as Sin has the last line of, am I allowed to cry? Which is just like, I feel like we would hear that line in like a RuPaul skit that they're making everyone do. So yeah, I'm not a fan there. And then also this was the song I enjoyed least on the album. I Can Fix Him, No Really I Can, that ends with, maybe I can't.
I agree. I think that line sucks. I know you like it. That's so interesting because I really love Guilty as Sin and I Can Fix Him, No Really I Can.
Ooh.
Like, I Can Fix Him. No, really, I can. I think I put it, that was number 27 for me.
I'm more of a country girl than either of you guys are. And I feel like that's what she's pulling from with, like, the guitars and the spareness. I was just like, oh, yeah, like, yeah. this is something. Yeah, I know what you mean about, like, not quite sticking the landing on that last line. I can see why you could think that, but I think in the context of the song, I think it, the way that line is positioned, I think hits on a level of horror at the end of that song that I found really effective.
Mm.
Like this idea of, you know, they were all shaking their heads and saying, what a mess, when I told them this was my man. Like, I can handle a dangerous man. I'm the one who can fix him. I'm the one who can make him better. And that realization of this dangerous man that the speaker is speaking to. And then realizing, oh, no, I can't. Is very interesting, of realizing that, oh no, it's either a heartbreak of that they are in fact leaving, or that this lover is turning on her in a way that I think is interesting.
I see your point and I disagree with you, but that's sure. Okay.
That's okay.
I would say, I think I have a similar issue with But Daddy, I Love Him, which I think did you like that song?
I did like that song.
Okay. I was just gonna say, if you like the country, I bet you're gonna like that one, which I really didn't care for.
You and I both were not loving that song, Joanna. I think the, you know, but you should see your faces. I don't know. It's, I get what she was going for with this song. I just think it's not. It needed another draft for me.
I like the music of the song. Like, I like the way that it sounds. I like the way that it kind of builds on itself and stuff like that. But I could not get past like an adult woman like using daddy in this way. And I know like Southern, I know like Tennessee, I know like teenage family, whatever, you know, a million things. But I myself could not really get past this daddy, I love him piece.
See, I think that's interesting because I think I was thinking about that as well as I was listening to the song today. And I had this realization of, in a song that's very much dealing with the binary of maturity and youth.
Uh-huh.
It's really interesting that this seems like the only song on the record where Taylor is casting herself in a fictional story that seems to deliberately infantilize her, that puts her in a position of being much younger than she actually is, like referring herself as like, what was it, dutiful daughter.
Sure. I think she does that a little bit on the manuscript as well.
But that's from like an older person looking back.
Sure.
And it seems like in the world of the song, she's experiencing life as
someone who is infantilized either because they are in fact very young.
Yeah.
Or because she's being put in that position by everybody around her.
Or her fans are writing an open letter saying she needs to stop dating somebody.
See, I mean, I think that idea and whatever emotions she felt in the wake of that is present here. I don't know that you can really point the finger. I mean, speaking of paternity tests, I don't think you can point that song and be like, oh, this is definitely about her fans, or this is definitely about media spokespeople having an opinion on who she dates. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of all of those and none of those.
Sure. Which I think is probably true with a lot of these songs.
Yeah. But what I found was very interesting is by deliberately infantilizing herself, or at least casting her mind into a younger character's body or something mm-hmm. like that. It seemed to really hone in on the fact that she's been deliberately playing herself younger for years and years and years, as part of like her image was very wholesome and then became very sexual.
Sure.
I think it's an interesting idea to have a song about dating somebody that maybe you shouldn't be dating mm-hmm. and confirming that they are in fact like having sex.
Sure.
And are just really in love with each other
mm-hmm.
and trying to make it clear with, I think, the baby line that this love is legitimate because she wants it, not because it's going to have like a positive outcome, like a pregnancy.
Interesting.
I still don't like the song, but sure. I see where you're coming from.
Thank you, baby.
Yes. Yes.
I don't really feel like we should be doing this. I'm having his baby. No, not really, but you should see your faces. Like, the song feels very Southern. It feels very country. And like with the downfall of Roe, I just kind of felt like it's not funny. I had a political reaction to this song in a way that I usually don't with her music. I don't know.
I get that. I get that too. Like this is not the time to be making such jokes, Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah. We've talked about so many of these songs. Do we want to are there anywhere that we're burning to talk about, or do we want to kind of start maybe wrapping up a little bit?
I think we should. We don't want anybody in our listener base to be like, oh, they need to edit. This is such a long podcast. All
telling
the time.
Them no anymore.
wrap it up.
Do we just want to do a rapid fire album ranking? Do we feel prepared for this? Doing. And Joanna, you said earlier that you feel like your album rankings change daily. I completely agree.
Oh my
with
gosh!
That.
Yes, I feel that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who would like to go first?
I can go first. Are we just saying where we think this is in the ranking, or all 11 albums?
Give me all 11 if you got them. I got them written down right there, baby.
Thank you.
Don't be influenced by my ranking.
Oh, this is tough. I think my number one is still Folklore. Then I think it's Midnights.
Oh, interesting.
Then Evermore. Red. 1989, Reputation.
Oh, wow.
Tortured Poets. Fearless, Speak Now, debut.
Did you get to say Lover?
I thought I did. Apparently, it's very forgettable. I forgot that it existed.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. I just had to go kind of with my gut on this. I'm going Folklore number one, Reputation number two, Evermore number three, Lover number four, 1989 number five, Red number six, Speak Now number seven, Midnight's number eight, Fearless number nine, Debut number 10, and rounding us out in 11th place is the Tortured Poets Department.
So I also, I'm here on the Folklore Evermore train. Evermore was my number one today. Reputation was my number two. Folklore was my number three. Lover was my number four. 1989 was my number five. Speak Now was my number six. And Midnights, which on Sundays would rank much higher, today was number seven. And the Tortured Poets Department was number eight. The albums that I think it tops for me are Red, Fearless, and Debut. And I think just in general, my reason for the Tortured Poets Department being above those is just because I feel like Taylor has come into her voice a lot more in the intervening years. And so, so it's number eight for me.
Interesting. Our lists are pretty similar, actually. Our lists are similar, I think.
Yeah, I noticed we both had Reputation as number two, Lover as number four, 1989 as number five. And then I think like my rating of like Speak Now being six and Midnight's being seven, you had those at like seven and eight because you had rated Red a little higher. And then we were both really similar. Like you had Fearless at number 10 as the best. So yeah, we had like a general agreement.
Well, and I was also struck with the fact, like, you know, for me, my top four and your top four as well, just in a different order, Folklore, Rap, because I just say Rap because I'm such a stan, Evermore and Lover. I mean, those are consecutive albums, you know, I mean, not listed consecutively, but like those were all produced in the same chunk. So
well, so is 1989, isn't it? 1989 was right before Reputation.
Yeah. Was right before Reputation. Yeah, no, you're right. You're totally right. Yeah, I mean, my final thoughts on this are that I am totally prepared to come back here in a week and say I was wrong. Or not even I was wrong, because I stand by what I said tonight, but that my opinions have changed. I have different thoughts. I have enjoyed the album more. The more I've listened to it, there are still some songs that I'm absolutely skipping. You know, there's a lot of songs on this album. I'll put this out to our listeners. If you would like to see our full rankings, let us know, send us an email and you know, we can post them. Because yeah, it's just, we would be here for 3 days if we tried to talk about all of these songs. It's amazing to me that we've only covered like maybe half of them, if that, and we've been talking for an hour and a half. Final thoughts, both of you.
Well, I want to say that I did a little bit of a calculation, today, which is that, Taylor released Midnights in October of 2022. And it is now April of 2024. So that is like 19 months, I'm going to say. About 19 months. And in that time, Taylor Swift, she released Midnight. She released Speak Now, Taylor's version. We got 1989, Taylor's version. We got the Tortured Poets Department. And we had the single, You're Leaving Me. Taylor has released 99 songs.
Oh my God.
99 songs in 19 months. So regardless of if there are still those who say no to Taylor, I do think if anyone was Taylor Swift and wanted to take a well-deserved break, that would be entirely appropriate.
My wish for Taylor is a nice long nap. I wanted to just take a nap.
Take a nap.
A nap. A nice snack.
Yeah, just like some rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't really talk about it, but there's like references to alcoholism and suicidal ideation in this album. So like she's been through shit. Any final thoughts from you, baby?
My final thoughts is, as of like the first, within a week of its release, Tortured Poets Department, I like it much more at the gate than I did Midnight's. It's in like my lower third, but maybe like with Midnight's, it will rank much higher a year from now. Although I hope not, because I experienced heartbreak in that time.
I hope for that too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any final thoughts, observations, what have yous?
I think we're good. I think we have I think we have spoken all that we have to speak on this album.
Well, this meeting of the Torture Podcasters Department. Yes, that will be the episode title.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I've been working on that for a few minutes. I think we're coming to an end here. If you have thoughts on this album, if you want to hear more of our thoughts, you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. We promise we are going to get back to Original Sin. We had some scheduling snafus, and then, you know, this album came out. We just had to talk about it. So, but, you know, until then, thank you for riding along on our Swiftie deep dives.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.